Daddy, do you know what happened to my Lego X-Wing?
No. Why?
What's wrong, Anders?
The X-Wing has, shall we say, departed this world and exists in pieces.
So it broke.
Well, we'll figure it out later. I have to go.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would request that you all stay until the investigation is complete.
Investigation? Isn't that a bit extreme?
I suspect foul play. And I have eliminated no suspects.
You've got to be kidding me. All right, fine. If you must know, I was prepping for the podcast on Knives Out. Since then, I've been having breakfast with Mom and Jossie.
This makes no sense. It's as if the truth has a hole in it, like a donut.
What's sad about donuts?
This is a twisted web. And we are not done untangling it yet.
You don't understand.
You all love twisting the knife.
All right, fine. I did it. I'm sorry. I woke up early so I could pretend to battle the Death Star. I had to practice with the new movie coming and all. What can I do to make it up to you?
Oh, I have an opinion, but I have a feeling you'll follow your heart.
Seriously, where are the donuts?
Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish.
I gotta figure out how to do two tracks better, but one track will be fine.
Okay. Sounds good, man.
Cool. All right, man. Thanks. This will be fun. I appreciate it. So, welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are so glad this week that you could join us as we talk about Rian Johnson's Knives Out, his ode to the classic mystery. And this week, we are so thrilled to have back from Seeing and Believing, Wade Bearden. Welcome back, Wade.
Hey, I'm so excited. We were just talking about how It's been over a year since I was on the show, which just feels like too long. It actually feels like 2 years because time is different at this point in history. But I'm glad to be on.
That's fair. Yes. 1 year feels twice as long. So thanks for coming back. We appreciate it.
Yeah. No. But watching your kids grow up, it's happening so fast. But like world events, It's happening very slow.
That's true. Don't worry. There's an election next year. Knives Out is a thriller written and directed by Rian Johnson, which tells the story of Harlan Thrombey, a crime novelist who dies just after his 85th birthday party. When an inquisitive detective arrives at his estate to investigate, he has to sift through a web of red herrings and self-serving lies to uncover the truth behind the writer's untimely demise. Starring Jamie Lee Curtis, Toni Collette, Michael Shannon, Chris Evans, and half of Hollywood, Knives Out is in theaters now. And a very important reminder that this podcast is rated S for spoilers. I need to emphasize that more with this episode even than most others, because if you really don't want to know the secrets of Knives Out, go see the film and come back. But Wade, what did you think of Knives Out?
It's one of those movies that I saw a couple weeks ago, and I've been thinking about since that time. I think it's probably the most fun that I've had at the theater this year, and it's not so much that Rian Johnson reinvents the whodunit subgenre as much as he adds his own flair to that subgenre. And his story, a pretty good mystery, but he makes it better through the way that he tells it and through some of the character beats. So it's a lot of fun. The performances are stellar. And it's definitely one of those movies that you got to watch with an audience, because that atmosphere definitely adds to the overall value, I think, of the movie.
Yeah, it's true. Seeing it in an audience, I've seen it now once in a packed theater and once in a half empty theater just because of the time of the screening. And when you're with all those people, it sort of brings it to life. And I think you're right. He doesn't reinvent the genre, the mystery genre, but I do feel like he breathes life into it. And he sort of owns the tropes. He doesn't shy away from the obvious comparisons. He makes them his own. You know, they say this guy practically lives in a clue board. They reference Sherlock Holmes and Watson. And I really, really think that Benoit Blanc is one of the most unique characters to step out onto the screen in recent years. He's just a joy to watch. Daniel Craig is just so having so much fun in this film.
No, I agree. And I feel like the entire cast is having a lot of fun. And I was actually surprised by Ana de Armas's character. And she really is the moral center of this picture, the main character of this picture. We work through her, just her culpability in this entire ordeal, wondering whether she's good or whether she's bad. And she really is that kind-hearted individual. And we could talk about some of the power dynamics that go into this movie, but she really takes a could be kind of a stock character, just the person we're supposed to relate to, and makes her very, very interesting and shades her in a way that keeps us guessing up until the very end. But yeah, I mean, we could talk about so many different characters. Jamie Lee Curtis is great, and Michael Shannon is good. I wish we had more of him, but there's just so many good character beats.
Yeah, I think you're right. The every character in here, you could say, I wish I had more of them. But at the same time, the film feels somewhat balanced in the way that it should be. And I have to say, I'm never going to quite look at Captain America the same way again after seeing Chris Evans in this movie. I agree with you fully. I think, honestly, it's the most fun in a theater I think I've seen or I think I've had this year or in recent years. There's just so much there. And the set design is just gorgeous. Every aspect of the wallpaper, every ornament on a stand, the circular knives pointing in, everything there is interesting to see, and it all feels like it's leading to something else. It's a real testament, I think, to what can be done to help bring life to a story like this.
Yeah, Johnson does a fantastic job of emphasizing the production design and telling a story through that production design. And like you mentioned, the old money that's sitting in this estate, as well as the atmosphere. It's bright colors, but there's also kind of shadows, and there's some grain across the screen, which reinforces the old-fashioned nature of this vehicle. How we're really not quite sure what lurks in the shadows here. And what secrets will be revealed and how they'll be revealed. And two, one of the things I appreciate about this film, Steve, is the family dynamics. And at the beginning, as they're being interviewed by a character, there's this kind of reoccurring theme where they're like, well, you know, I usually keep this in the family. And then share every little detail. And it's fun to see how they view themselves in connection with their family members, how they view themselves in connection with their father. There are actually a number of times where characters see themselves giving their father his birthday cake, and then another character will see themselves giving their father the birthday cake. So they're all kind of vying for his attention. They all want to be the face. And they think they're closer to each other than they are, but they're really just the entire family. They're just all rivals, which makes this even more fascinating of a story, because they all kind of want the money for themselves, but when they don't get it, they decide to band together to work to get it, and that adds a fun dynamic to the story.
Yeah, yeah. The family relationships here are just fascinating to watch, and like you said, they seem very connected until the heat goes on, and then all of a sudden they're willing to turn on each other. We see with Ransom's character, for example, when he finally shows up for the will reading, and you know, they've sort of been at each other's throat, but then all of a sudden the family turns on him and starts saying, "We think this is the best thing for you." Every one of them says, "This is the best thing for you. Finally, you know, you've been cut out." And then, of course, when we find out that the family finances have been given to Marta, and he gets in the car and he looks at them, they're all steaming and they're all sort of been pushed aside, and he says, repeats that great line, "I think this is the best thing for all of you." And they're just so willing to tear at each other's flesh, but at the same time band together in order to make sure that they're taken care of. So it's a really fascinating dynamic between them. The thing I've noticed about Johnson's work is that he's excellent at taking a genre with expectations and putting his own sort of stamp on it. So with films like Looper and Star Wars, when he did Last Jedi, he takes these films where everybody sort of has these expectations of what they should be. Because Looper, you could make the argument that in some ways it's really a Terminator-esque film, and Star Wars has all its own expectations. But then he comes in and he's willing to say, okay, here is the structure, but I'm going to flip the switch. So it sort of honors the genre while at the same time bringing us something new. And I feel like he's doing that with this one as well.
Yeah, and I appreciate, too, that this is a very entertaining film. But there's also this fun, I say fun, this fun but also probing political allegory to the entire narrative. You have the upper class, and these characters are constantly have made a name for themselves, when in fact they've built all of their lives off of the success of their father. And we learn that as the story goes on. They're not self-made people. Now, maybe they've worked hard, but they weren't doing it alone. They were standing on his shoulders. And so there's this idea that, hey, we kind of earned all of this, and that is just – it's not true. That plays out in the way that they treat Marta, and they can never – get her country of origin right. They always say a different country of origin anytime they're talking about her history. And I think some of the conversations are a little too heavy-handed. It pulled me out of the story because it's very obvious it's about the political structure and the debates going on in America. But I think for the most part, the movie does have something to say about this class dynamic. And that's where it gets telling too, Steve, because – and I know we wanted to talk about this. But Marta's character, rather than going the way of something like Parasite, where you almost have this war between the lower class and the upper class, she is genuinely a good person. And towards the end of the movie, we get the question of, okay, what is she going to do with the money now? And I walked away thinking to myself, well, she is going to share that money with probably the family, but also with other people. So there's this hope that's really just kind of greater than, well, the upper class is going to fight against the lower class and it's going to get really bloody. But perhaps maybe there is this turning of the tables that provides equality for people really across the board.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there, Wade. I think that there's a really interesting conversation going on, and sure, there are moments where it's, you know, a little too obvious in some ways, but this is not necessarily a film about an uprising so much as an opportunity for I don't know whether to call it a different type of justice. I mean, the question of what justice looks like in this film to me is pretty interesting. Because at the end of the film, yeah, she – I I don't entirely know what she's going to do with that money. But at the same time, when she's speaking with Meg, you know, Meg says they're going to cut me off of school. She says, don't worry, I'm going to help you. Now, of course, Meg is using that to try and manipulate her. But the suggestion is there that she says, you know what, I really am not my goal is not to keep this money. My goal is not to own it. But at the same time, the relationship with her and the family is so strained. You know, it's so interesting to me, the idea of her role in the family, because that's how they refer to her at the beginning. They, you know, in fact, in the opening, Lakeith Stanfield refers to her as the help. And they say, that's not okay. The help, that she's like family.
Yeah.
And as soon as she gets the money, you know, they start saying things like, I know he was like family to you, but we're his actual family. And everything is shifted now, because now it's threatening their way of life.
Mm. No, and that's true. And what we see in Marta's character is kind of the direct opposite. So she gets to the place where instead of doing anything to hang on to the money, like the family is trying to do, she offers this beautiful confession of what has happened, of how she believed to have switched the medications on accident, and she's tried to cover it up, and she wants to come clean to save the other woman who's also working at the house. And that's just this air of transparency that you don't get with this family. And you also have these, you know, just in life, big financial institutions, they don't want transparency because they don't want everyone knowing their business. But she offers that transparency. And then in addition, Daniel Craig's character, he has these great lines of dialogue, but he talks about the inevitability of truth. And so we walk away from this movie with this idea that, hey, like, maybe things will actually be okay. And I that's kind of a difficult, almost subversive at this point where we are, is the idea of, well, there is inequality and there are problems, but maybe there's hope. Maybe justice will eventually come. And of course, that elicits in me this longing for a divine justice, this justice that we believe to be embedded in the universe, that, hey, one day, like, there is this justice that will be here, and truth is inevitable, even if we don't see it, you know, right away, but we believe it is coming.
When I came out of it the second time I was watching it, I thought, in some ways, this felt like I was watching the Beatitudes play out on screen.
Okay, yeah, yeah. No, I like that.
Because, I mean, in her character, there's this humility, there's this brokenness, there's an actual mourning for Harlan, the loss of Harlan. And yet at the end of the film, here she is holding the mug that says, my house, as she stands above these people who are willing to climb over themselves to take power. And just the motivations of her heart end up elevating her character by the end of the film. And, you know, it's a remarkable reversal. And you're right, it's not the type of, you know, it's not like, you know, something like Count of Monte Cristo, where you have somebody who is going to take revenge. This is a character who is aware of what's going on, but feels such responsibility for something that she didn't do. There's a humility and a love there for people in general that sets her apart than anyone else in the film.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that, and I kept hoping that when the twist came, that they wouldn't find her character guilty, and so that was a lot of fun. I did want to ask you, Steve, how do you feel like the mystery played out? Did you think that it played out well? Do you think that the twists work? Did you walk away kind of satisfied with, okay, yeah, that person did it, and they did it in this way, and okay, yeah, that's super interesting. How did you feel about all that?
Well, you know, the funny thing to me is that the way that it ends, I found satisfying because it even though we had a murderer, they still managed to rule it a suicide. And mm-hmm. and to me, that was an interesting way to flip the switch. The question that I had in that moment really is from Blanc's speech, because he makes a comment about Marta's character that there was no possible way she could have made the error with the medication. Mm-hmm. So to me, that was one of those moments where I had to pause and think, now, did I buy that aspect of the twist? Because I do believe that Marta is a good character, but I don't know how I felt per se that there was somehow something in her that would prevent her from making an error, even in innocence. But I don't know. What did you think of that aspect?
I think part of the movie, and this is referred to explicitly at some points, is this idea that, hey, if you work really hard, like, you're going to be super successful. So if you work hard, you're dedicated to your job. And I think the film says, well, that's not always the case with everyone. And there are people who work hard who don't end up in this particular situation as a wealthy family. They don't have what we would call old money. And I think with Marta and that kind of twist at the end, they're painting this character who takes her job very seriously and has taken the time and effort to really feel out what needs to be done. And so she can sense the weights in that medication because she's used it and she's paid attention and she's tried to do her best. Now, she did make the mistake of not reading the label, but the idea that she did it because she's not smart or this or that, I think it really kind of tears that apart at the end when he does say that she cares enough about him to really pay attention in giving him the medicine, and that shows kind of her goodness, and it also shows just her dedication to the job. So I actually think it does work, and it provides a little bit of catharsis because at the end we're like, okay, it's not her fault. She didn't do anything wrong, and she actually is a really hard worker. So that makes me feel better about what happens, you know, with him dying.
Yeah, I will say this. It was one of those things that I almost felt relief. Not that I, you know, of course, I loved her character and I didn't want her to have done it, you know, of course. However, the thing that I thought was interesting about that is it does absolve her emotionally. You know, there is almost a grace in that, don't worry, you could not have done this because it's not who you are. It's who everyone else is. So in that aspect, I actually very much appreciated it because it certainly demonstrates the power of good character. However, it was one of those things that when I first heard it, I went, well, hold on. Good people can make mistakes.
Yeah.
Certainly there was no malice. But, you know, I hear what you're saying, and certainly the fact that she knows her job well and she did genuinely care for Harlan, to me it sort of hung there in the air, and I had to really play with that for a minute and say, do I think that works? I really liked how it played out with Ransom. And even the fact that, you know, in the inevitable monologue where Blanc spews out all the details that we have somehow missed along the way, there's still this improvisation. It's not all a master plan. That there was a master plan, but along the way he had to make adjustments. That it was sort of like, you know, well, when you were too good of a person to let his plan go through, so he had to continue to try and find ways to manipulate his end game. No pun intended there on the Chris Evans side. But the idea that there were variables to this murder that went off but also didn't go off as planned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in addition to that, in addition to that kind of whole storyline with her and with him, you get this character who went from an opportunist to someone who becomes even more diabolical. And it's kind of fun to watch that change go through. And I think maybe that's part of the nuances of some of these characters that we get in Johnson's screenplay. I really like how Marta can't tell a lie, and if she does, she throws up. It's just this sort of fun twist. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is this is one of those movies that doesn't reinvent the wheel, but as you said, it adds new life or adds this freshness to this, you know, whodunit subgenre. And I think Johnson does a fantastic job. And I would probably assume that this will be in my top 10 of the year. It's just it's that good of a movie.
Yeah, yeah. The idea of a potential murderer who is also a human lie detector is just an incredible twist. I love that.
Yeah.
Even down to the way they used it in the final moment where she answers the phone. It was just great. Just great. As you mentioned before, she does a wonderful job. You know, she's been around a while, but she's really broken out since Blade Runner 2049. And for all intents and purposes, here's a movie that really rests on her character. And she handles it marvelously. I think that she really brings life into the character of Marta.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And it's nice to see Armas in this type of role, where she's given an opportunity with a good screenplay to really put on something special. And I think she does great as Joy in Blade Runner 2049. But this is something very different, and it's something I haven't seen her do before. And so that's pretty exciting.
Speaking of Marta's character, as we talk about that, one of the things that I've seen, or we see in this film, is memory is played with. You touched on it before when you talked about the birthday cakes and that, but especially with Marta. Memory is a fuzzy thing, and it really is sort of brought to life based on motivations and perspective. You know, for example, even as Marta is trying to remember whether or not she should pull off to the side of the road before or after the security camera. And I think at one point it actually the memory says before, and the next it says after, and then I think they actually say be after for at one point. How do you think that plays out in the film, Wade, when you talk about memory and its relationship to the characters?
Yeah, I mean, there's some obvious references, and I mentioned one with the birthday cake, that people remember events differently because they want to remember them that way. They want to be their father's favorite, so they are the ones handing him a birthday cake. And then just the confusion of life, where you think you hear something when actually someone said something different. I think, too, memory also plays a part in the way this film is laid out, the way that it's edited together. I was surprised that the story begins long after the murder has happened. I think it's like 7 days or 10 days or something like that. And then we get these kind of flashbacks, and some of them almost feel haphazard. Some of them are kind of slapped onto the story. And the way that Johnson edits the film together is as if the story is being told by a narrator who is fairly reliable but not altogether reliable. That we're playing with memory, we're seeing things at different points in time. We're seeing this scene, and then we go back and we see that scene, something that happened beforehand, and then we cut forward. And I think that adds to the really just the comedic nature of the movie. I think it also adds to the intensity of the movie. And I mentioned this on our podcast when I was talking with my co-host Kevin about it. I said, you know, if you take a movie like Memento, so Christopher Nolan's Memento, the story isn't necessarily groundbreaking per se. It's just told so well. It's told in a very unique way, and it's a good story. And as a result, it's a fantastic movie. I think the same is here, as done here, in that this is not necessarily a groundbreaking mystery. It's not going to be a better mystery than you would find in, you know, the novels of Agatha Christie or something like that. But it's told really well, and I think that memory plays a large part in the way that the story is laid out.
Yeah, I'm glad that you bring that up because, you know, a film like this needs to be told in a certain way. You could tell it straightforward, or you can with a few adjustments here or there, but it has to be visually represented in a way that it's more than just a half-decent mystery. That it has to be something that actually plays out sort of visually. And one of the things I thought was really interesting with the use of memory in this film is so much of it is shaped by the perspective, the feelings of each character. And certainly you're right. Everybody wants to view themselves as their father's favorite or their role in the family a certain way. But even in the character of Marta, Marta views her situation actually more negatively than it really is, because her feelings about it and her the way that she understands things to be, you get the sense that she's putting too much weight on herself, whereas the others want all the blame off of them. I think it shows the hearts of these characters in a different way, visually represented. Marta is one who truly wants to own responsibility and doesn't. She actually says at one point she doesn't fear going to jail. She only fears her family, what the ramifications on her family. But the others want to be as far away from it as possible. You know, clearly it wasn't their fault, or this is not their problem, or you know who it was? It was them. It was my brother, or it was my low-life nephew, or my kid, or my son, or my daughter. They're always willing to shift the blame. But Marta's view of the world is so intrinsically good-natured that there's a real sense of ownership, almost over the top, from hers, and it plays into the way that she reviews the events.
Yeah. And then also in addition to memory too, the way the camera zips and the way the camera pans adds this sort of loose nature to the events that we're remembering this or we're looking at this character, but then looking at that character. So I think it all kind of flows together. And then there is a great shot near the end of the movie where we see this throne made out of knives, and we get kind of side shots throughout the film, but we get a full glimpse of it at the end, and it adds this just sort of striking impression, and all of that's kind of wrapped up in money and fame and guilt and murder, and I think all of that kind of goes into what Johnson is saying about time, what he's saying about memory, what he's saying about these characters, and the production design feeds into all that. And then too, you know, as we're kind of closing up the discussion, the last shot in this movie is fantastic. It's Marta standing on the balcony and the family below, and the tables have turned. And it kind of goes back to what we were saying. Well, okay, what does she do next? Now, I believe she shows kindness, compassion, and grace. But there's definitely this powerful image of this person who was not seen as worth all too much by the family has now become the leader, the owner, the person in charge. And all that's kind of communicated in that big image at the end. And it's really a stunning image to end the film on.
You know, and what you said there about what she may or may not do, I don't think I said this before. Blanc makes a comment. She says, well, what do you think I should do? And he says, I have my opinions, but I have a feeling you'll follow your heart. This idea that her heart has such a purity to it that she could seek revenge. She could put the hammer down and push down on those who have been attacking her, but she genuinely does not want to do that. But that's why I think it's so interesting with that final shot, because you know, she's sipping a mug that says "My House," and there is that question. But I think you're right. I too would want to believe that she doesn't want to crush when she could, you know, offer grace and help where they've lost everything. But they're such vipers. I mean, would they even go for that? I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to know.
Yeah, and in one sense, you also know, too, the fight's not over. Like, it's not that she's got the money and it's done. The family's still going to do whatever they can to try to get it. So there's going to be this battle. But for now, she is on top. And she's on top because of the goodness of her heart.
Yeah, absolutely. Wade, obviously, this is great. I really appreciate getting the chance to chat with you. But we should probably start to wrap up here. Let's screen it or skip it. Knives Out, screen it or skip it?
Oh, definitely screen it. Screen it in an audience with a lot of people, a rowdy crowd, I think. And that would make a great experience.
Yeah, this is one of those ones that is hands down a screen it for me. And, you know, you could wait and watch it at home. But having that theater experience with people as Daniel Craig whips out a Southern drawl and and waxes wise on donuts. I mean, this, which is my favorite speech in the film, by the way.
It gets the best laughs. It really does.
Oh, man, it's so good. It is absolutely a screen it for me. And this is one of those ones I want everyone to know to go see this one because they're going to enjoy it. This isn't just a good movie. This is a crowd-pleasing, enjoyable film. And original. And it's so rare for us to get an original film like this that pops on screen with such energy. So I really, it's a strong recommendation for me.
Yeah. No, I'm glad we could agree. It makes this conversation so much easier when we can just kind of all both agree on this.
Well, if you want, I could re-record and just talk about everything I hated about the movie. Wade, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much, Steve, for having me on. I am always excited to come on the show and love what you're doing. And I really appreciate the support that you have for me as well. And you've come on our show, and yeah. I really love those episodes. So yeah, thanks for the invite.
Oh, thank you so much. And I love doing that too. I really do. Do you want to plug your show? Plug what you want.
Yeah. So I host Seeing and Believing. It's a film and television podcast that searches for the sacred on screen. That's what we say every week, and we do release an episode every week where we talk about usually two movies, but sometimes we throw in a television show, and we kind of do what you do. We talk about the film, we talk about the screenwriting, we talk about the production design, we talk about the technical aspects, but we also talk about how all of that speaks to our religious sensibilities. And so we do speak from our Christian faith, and it's a lot of fun. I really love my co-host, Kevin McLemith, and we have a good time. And so, yeah, check it out wherever you can get podcasts. It's Seeing and Believing.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. It's a great show. And Kevin, too, is a friend of this show, so we'll have him on soon as well. Definitely check out Seeing and Believing for you at home. Speaking of you at home, you can find us as well wherever podcasts are available, Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. You can find us on your Alexa device via Stitcher. If you go to the podcast page, screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, small group questions to help get the conversation started where you are about the film. So yet again, Wade, thank you so much. Let's not have it be another year before you come on.
No.
We will make sure it's sooner than that. But thank you so much. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.